Welcome to Reading the Grid with Erin and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. The 2025 Italian Grand Prix at Monza, otherwise known as the Temple of Speed, was all about speed, dominance, and a little bit of controversy. Max Verstappen turned pole into a crushing victory, setting the record for the fastest ever Formula One race with an average speed of over 250 kilometers an hour. He crossed the line nearly 20 seconds ahead of everyone else, reminding us that when Red Bull hooks up at a high-speed circuit, especially with him behind the wheel, there is still no catching him. But the bigger drama came just behind, with McLaren locking out the podium. Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri finished second and third, but a slow pit stop late in the race for Norris forced the team to shuffle positions. And when Piastri was asked to hand the spot back, the boos rang around Monza. It was a stark glimpse of the tension that comes when team orders collide with two drivers fighting for a championship.
McLaren again put themselves in an untenable position by creating drama that was unnecessary. There are a lot of comparisons to Hungary 2024, which is dissected by us in our episode 35, where McLaren made a mistake by pitting Lando Norris first, thus ensuring that Oscar Piastri, who was leading the race, would be second on the track after the tire changes. And then McLaren spent the rest of the race asking Lando to give up his position to Oscar with very uncomfortable and desperate radio messages. Lando ultimately gave up his position. This time around, McLaren again pitted the driver who was second on the track, this time Oscar, first, based on Lando's agreement or even prompted by him, as long as it was done without Lando losing a position. McLaren promised that he would not lose a position, and yet Lando's stop ended up being almost 6 seconds. In contrast, Oscar's was 1.9 seconds, thus creating the nightmare scenario of Lando ending up behind Oscar on the track. McLaren asked Oscar to give up the position back, and Oscar complied much quicker than Lando in Hungary 2024, not completely without protest. Was it fair of McLaren to ask it of him, given that both Oscar and Lando are fighting for the championship?
I had a tough time with this one because if you read through the radio messages, Oscar questioned the fact that in their team rules of racing, so whatever their parameters are to let them race, slow pit stops supposedly are in those parameters. So why this time, if they're set to race and a slow pit stop is fair game, it seems a bit questionable that McLaren this go round would give team orders to have them switch.
That's a very good point. I think, not to defend McLaren, yes, there was a slow pit stop, no doubt, but the fact that Oscar ended up ahead was also because he was pitted first. And yes, Lando not only acquiesced, some would suggest based on his radio messages that he's the one who suggested that they pit Oscar first. Thus, he took the chance that right, anything could happen. But in this case, pitting Oscar first was kind of out of his control. It was the team decision, with the understanding he would still be second on the track, and the slow pit stop exacerbated the situation, which is why you don't usually pit the driver second on the track first.
Well, it was interesting because when they asked him, Lando said, he asked, are you going to pit the other car first? But then it's like he realized that that would be an undercut. And then he quickly said, as long as, you know, he wouldn't be ahead. But that's the gamble you take on pit stops.
Well, that's why you call it an undercut, because you expect the person undercutting to be ahead.
Right. So in a way, it's like Lando said, let the other car go first, but that's, you're willing to take that gamble because you're also making the assumptions you're both going to have quick pit stops.
Exactly. And what boggles the mind that McLaren went with it and promised him. So then, of course, in their minds, we promised, we have to stand by this promise, not thinking, okay, what about the other driver? And I just want to say, I know I mentioned Hungary 2024. A little bit closer to our timeline is Hungary 2025. Again, the race we reviewed in our episode 34. That time, Lando got ahead of Oscar because of a pit strategy. Granted, it was a completely different strategy that they tried with Lando, not necessarily expecting him to be ahead. But again, they took that chance that it could happen. Did not ask Lando to give the position back. And also, when they were telling Oscar in terms of strategies that they were thinking of doing, they specifically asked him what was most important to him. And he specifically said it was to stay ahead of Lando.
Right. They're each other's biggest competitors. They're fighting it out for the driver's championship.
Right.
That's why it is baffling to me, these orders from this race, because, well, my question for you is this. 2021, you had Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton going into Abu Dhabi tied, even points. I don't think that had ever happened before. You'd had drivers where the last race would decide the championship, but they were actually dead even. If that same scenario comes up this year, either they're even on points or it's down to that race in Abu Dhabi, and one of them has a slow pit stop, do you think team orders are going to come into play? And do you think the driver is going to listen?
So the answer to that is, of course not. But I don't think they will put themselves in that position, because for that similar situation to happen, right, it would have to be, again, them pitting the second driver first. Now, the one change from Hungary 2024 to now is they actually ask Lando before they executed the change in pit stop priority. So in Abu Dhabi, if they ask that question, whether it's from Oscar or Lando, who are leading, they would never agree for the second car to pit first. And let's say they know that, so they're not going to ask, they're just going to do it. This was create so much, well, tension is not, I mean, this would be a nuclear option if they were to do that. So I just don't see it happening, even if they thought they could still get away with it.
McLaren has put themselves in the most precarious of situations.
Yes, they do. And we'll come back to this again in our words of wisdom section, because this was probably the biggest talking point of this race.
Oh, for sure. But there was more Monza theater around the midfield and at the back. We saw Fernando Alonso suffered a brutal front right suspension failure and was forced to retire. Nico Hülkenberg did not even make it to the start, retiring during the formation lap. Kimi Antonelli picked up a 5-second penalty that shuffled his finishing position. And Ollie Bearman was handed a 10-second time penalty plus 2 license points after a collision with Carlos Sainz, a result that now puts him close to the automatic 1 race ban threshold if more points follow. Lewis Hamilton, starting 10th after a grid penalty, worked his way up into the top 6 and grabbed some solid points for Ferrari. A small win for the Tifosi, with Charles Leclerc off the podium in 4th, on an otherwise bittersweet afternoon. And the bigger picture? Piastri still leads the standings, with Norris now 31 points behind, while Verstappen's win keeps him lurking in 3rd. McLaren remains miles clear in the constructors' battle, but Verstappen's Monza masterclass was a warning shot. Red Bull are not going to go quietly, and the championship fight still has some twists to come. Ina, who won your heart in Monza?
If we're looking at the top three, it can only be Max Verstappen. McLaren did not have the pace to stay with him. And even though Lando Norris managed to overtake him at the beginning, he fell away quite significantly and never looked close after lap four. Oscar Piastri kept losing his third position to Charles Leclerc, ultimately gaining it back on track. But then when team strategy and pit stop blunder put him ahead, gave his place back to Lando Norris, which we just discussed. So that can't really win my heart. And with Max, although again, the driving ability is always amazing and he put a masterclass out there, he also exhibited his unapologetic brash style and mentality, which including cutting the corner to stay ahead of Lando Norris and only giving the position back to avoid a penalty, and laughing at the fact that Oscar Piastri gave up his second position to Lando. Perhaps his race engineer, GP Lambiasi's radio message in response to his laughing about Oscar giving away his position deserves the winning moment. So this is what GP says. It's not our business, but I guess it keeps it fair between the drivers in terms of championship. You focus on the road ahead, please. It was peak communication, which was short, succinct, and constructive. He shut down further discussion, focused Max, and explained a team dynamic that Max will never understand. In terms of the drivers in the midfield, Albon impressed with his P7 finish from P14 in qualifying, even though he admitted again that he did not have to do much, since he moved up at least two spots because of Hülkenberg's do not start and Alonso's did not finish. And Hadjar got into the points after pit lane start, although he was almost absent from the Sky broadcast.
Oh, Hadjar was not absent from the F1 broadcast. They made sure to make a point of the fact that he was on the podium where he started. And I give him a lot of credit for working his way into the points. Like, I thought that was pretty phenomenal on his part. As far as who won my heart, Imanza, I agree with you. It can be none other than Max Verstappen. He was on point, dialed in, super focused. His lap times were incredible. They just kept getting quicker and quicker in the race, with Max setting the record that he did. Phenomenal. It's like he just needed to remind everybody that he's still the best driver on the grid.
Definitely. And again, in words of wisdom, we'll hear more from Max.
Who broke your heart, Ina? I have quite a few contenders this go round.
Well, one of the heartbreakers was actually the Tifosi at the Monza track, because when Lando Norris came onto the podium, they booed him. And I did not feel that the boos were deserved.
They were not. That was poor sportsmanship.
It was. I have seen reports that claim that this was a reaction to Ferrari's not being on the podium, which I don't believe is the case, because then Oscar would be booed as well. And he wasn't, at least not as audibly as Lando. And if it wasn't a reaction to McLaren's team orders, it was not Lando's fault. McLaren, as a team, decided to issue those orders. And McLaren, as a team, again, screwed up the strategy and ended up with a poor pit stop that caused all the kerfuffle, which would not have happened if they did not pit Norris second, which would have been a prevailing wisdom of what not to do. So I feel that was very undeserved. In terms of drivers, although arguably Hülkenberg's DNS and Alonso DNF were the most unfortunate, at least that was not due to their driving. So I'm torn between Kimi Antonelli and Oliver Bearman. Kimi Antonelli, he had a very messy weekend. He took himself out in the early stages of FP2. His qualifying was actually impressive because he qualified in P7 right next to George Russell, his teammate, with a very small gap. I believe it was less than a tenth, which is the smallest gap he's ever gotten in qualifying to George. The results were better than last week at Zandvoort, But he still ended up with a penalty for tussling with Albon, which was completely unnecessary, and that dropped him to finish in P9. He made a lot of mistakes. And the biggest issue is he looked tentative, he did not look all that fast, and he looked desperate. Oliver Bearman, on the other hand, qualified in his least favorite place, P11, still ahead of his teammate. But in the race, there was this unfortunate incident with Carlos Sainz that the stewards, who are probably the villains of our podcast, deemed to be his fault, and for which he got a penalty, which is bad enough as it is for his chances in this race. But what's most heartbreaking is that he got 2 more penalty points on his license, meaning that he now has 10 penalty points. And if he gets 2 more, he will get a race ban. What's interesting is that in last year's 2024 Italian Grand Prix, Kevin Magnussen, who had a Haas seat, got his final 2 penalty points to get to a race ban, and Ollie Bearman replaced him for the next race in Baku.
What do they say, karma?
I don't know. Like, is it something about... But I think, well, he kind of... 6 of his penalty points is because of his red flag infringements, which is totally on him. And so it's hard to say all of his points have been undeserved, but definitely these two were not deserved at all.
I was seriously hoping Carlos Sainz would have a comeback tour for Monza. He's usually really good at Monza, but I will say I think one of the saddest things was, did you notice when at the end of the race you had Charles and Lewis driving next to each other in formation and Carlos is tagging along behind them? It was almost going, hey guys, hey, I used to be a Ferrari driver. Once a Ferrari driver, always a Ferrari driver. Can I have my seat back?
Well, you know what's interesting? So I actually watched a little bit of the driver parade scenes. And those are always fun because they feature interviews, but I always want to see behind the person who's interviewed, like what's going on. And it was very interesting because I swear Carlos Sainz followed Charles Leclerc like he was attached to him at the cap. Anywhere Leclerc went,
Carlos
Sainz would
went
follow.
Too.
Yes, because, you know, Charles was waving to the Tifosi, like being social, and like anywhere he went, like there was the floppy hair of Sainz. But my favorite shot, and again, this was just probably the angle, but there was a shot where on one end of the platform, you had Hülkenberg and Gasly talking, and on the other end of the platform, there were several drivers, but again, Sainz was attached to Leclerc, and you could see Gasly like forlornly looking at that end of the platform, like my bestie, like somebody stole my bestie.
That's so funny.
So who broke your heart, Aaron?
Well, it was going to be Isaac Hadjar, but he did a little redeeming of himself because I had such high hopes for him coming off of his first podium, and then I was really worried about him starting from the pit lane, but he ended up in the points, so I thought that was great. I can't even say that Lewis and Charles broke my heart because I don't think there's anything they could have done different. They did get my hopes up, so shame on them for getting my hopes up from some of their practice performance to actual qualifying in the race. I was pleased to see Hamilton looking more comfortable in the car. Him charging through the field and coming back from his penalty was reminiscent of years past, which was thrilling, to be quite honest, because we haven't had much of that. Overall, I don't really have like a standout heartbreaker. There are so many that were kind of just like, eh.
Fair. And since you brought up Lewis, let's talk about Ferrari, which had a very frustrating weekend. I agree with you. Our hopes were up because based on practices,
I was Ferrari... like, this is going to go fantastic.
Yeah. So Lewis Hamilton actually topped the charts in FP1. And Leclerc was second in all the practices, no matter who was on top. And I thought that meant something.
Me
Spoiler
too.
Alert, it meant
it
nothing.
It didn't.
It meant very little. So the qualifying pace was very disappointing. And then, of course, Leclerc miraculously won last year coming from P4. And that's where he qualified. Now, I knew this was not going to happen this year, and he knew this was not going to happen this year. But you can't help but think, well, what if something happens? Like, anything could happen in a race, and he's not that far from the top three. And then when he was looking like he could secure P3, there was always a chance. So that was a little hard. And I just don't understand a little bit of Ferrari strategy, because they technically didn't do anything wrong, but they also didn't really try to do something different, at least with Lewis Hamilton. So it seemed like everyone who was on the hard tire first and then switched to medium, that was the preferred option. So for instance, Albon, he and Sainz split strategies, and he was on that strategy, and he got to P7 from P14. Hadjar got from pit lane to P10 on the same strategy, and he, Lawson, had a different strategy, and we'll talk about Lawson in a minute, but it didn't work out great for him. So it got me thinking, am I wrong in thinking splitting strategy for Hamilton and Leclerc would be not a horrible thought? I think for Hamilton, it probably would have made sense because he was 10th. So what did he really have to lose? And he might have actually gotten further than P6. Maybe he could have cleared George Russell. Who knows? And also, when they pitted both drivers, I guess there's nothing wrong with it, but it was kind of weird because for Leclerc, I felt it was too early. And for Hamilton, it wasn't late enough, and they put him still on hard tires. So it was just a little bit of a mess. Although I think ultimately they probably would not have ended anywhere higher than where they ended up.
No, so I would have loved for Hamilton to get around Russell and at least have them be 4-5, have them finish back to back. But I mean, that 5-place penalty was a bit rough.
It was absolutely very unfortunate. But he did good, make good progress.
I was pleased with his race performance. Like, he seemed happy. He was very appreciative of how warm of a welcome that Tifosi gave him. And I can only imagine, as a Ferrari driver, how special that is. I was a little worried when you said they were doing blue for the 50th anniversary of Niki Lauda securing the World Driver Championship. And Pirelli, it was their 500th Grand Prix.
Yeah, they didn't do that great on the tire choices here.
Well, I was going to say, I might back it up and say they could be the ones who broke my heart because they could have done a little bit better. This is the second race this season where I feel like Pirelli is at fault for how the race went with their tire choices.
Yeah, they weren't degrading at all, even mediums.
No, I mean, I think some of the drivers could have, if you started on hards, you probably could have finished the entire race on a set of tires.
I agree, because I think that, like, Ocon pitted at the very end, and he didn't really have to.
It's only because he had to. I was surprised McLaren went for softs, because softs weren't. But they started on medium, right?
Right. That's another team which I thought could have split strategies. Because my point is, I get it. Like, who gets the strategy that may not work out? But on the other hand, if you are in the same car and one guy is behind the other, what are the chances that he'll get ahead? The only way he could get ahead is a timely safety car and or a difference in strategy.
Yeah, I don't know. Should we read the grid?
Yes, we should.
Yay! All right. Aston Martin, I can tell you there was no wooing going on this race.
Well, I thought maybe somebody would break your heart for Aston Martin, but I guess they never want it, so there's nothing to break.
There's nothing to break. I was hoping that Fernando Alonso was going to be P6 or higher. That definitely did not happen. Aston Martin, this had to have been one of the worst races of the year for them. Alonso managed to qualify in Q3, which was quite an achievement because, as a surprise to almost no one, Lance Stroll went out again in Q1.
How could that happen?
Gosh, I know. But in his defense, the spread between all 20 drivers in Q1 was so small. Stroll's strategy made very little sense. He started on hard tires, which seemed to be the preferable strategy, as we've mentioned, but pitted only at the very end for soft tires that did not really work for anyone. And he ended up in 18th place, which is last of the drivers that actually finished.
It is, but it's hard to blame him solely. I feel like the team did not give him preferential strategies at all. And of course, the choice to pit him so late in the race, like there's nowhere he could finish but at the end.
Yeah, that's just unfortunate. And then you already alluded to Ollie Bearman. So I want to talk about Haas.
So it's interesting that we talk about Haas after Aston Martin, because we had a little dust up with Ocon and Stroll, who are actually besties on the grid. But of all the penalties that was given out, I feel like that one was the most deserved. Although people were saying mean things about how like Lance Stroll just like decided to not even try and went off by himself. It's a little mean. I feel Ocon did his part. So yeah, the penalty was kind of deserved. And he really did not have a great weekend. He was outqualified by Bearman by quite a bit. And he pretty much did not have a good race. So nothing to write home about. Deserved penalty. Hope he and Stroll are still friends.
I'm sure. What cracks me up is in every single race, it's always that guy, even if it isn't that guy, if you listen to their messages. So they sound so cranky with each other, but then they're all friends at the end of it.
Hold that thought before we got to racing ball.
Well, fair. Except, so Alpine somehow was worse than Haas.
Well, they did not end up last, which I was shocked about, because they were last in every metric you can think of. And yet, again, mostly due to strategy, Lance Stroll ended up behind the Alpines, which I think is the hardest thing to probably wrap your mind around it. And at this point, hilariously, Pierre Gasly signed long-term extension. So I guess it's good for Alpine that they got him, because he could not have been very happy with this track. But again, Alpine's biggest issue is their engine, which is Renault engine, which is going away after this year, thankfully. And yes, this track, that's one of the tracks where it matters the most. So they were never going to be in the fight. So it wasn't that unexpected, I would think. But Racing Bulls, on the other hand, their weekend was a roller coaster. So they started off poorly. They both drivers went out in Q1. And Liam Lawson, who was giving us hope that he finally found his form, ended up being last. Again, the difference in times in Q1 was so minute that that's not as damning as we may think. But it's still pretty impressive, since we do have Alpine in the mix. Jar was really belligerent after the qualifying, because he had a little incident with Carlos Sainz of Williams. And it's another weekend where we have a Racing Bulls Williams beef. So Hadjar claimed that Sainz being on track, so going slowly, ruined his preparation for his flying lap, and that's what caused him to qualify in P16. But he took a new power unit, was starting from the pit lane, and made really good progress during the race. So ultimately, I think he came up with a positive. Liam Lawson, Aaron, your favorite. So this time he decided, you know what? Let's keep the beef within the family. And he actually had an incident with Yuki Tsunoda. Now, there was no penalty given out, and from what I gathered, it was most likely Yuki's fault. But Yuki Tsunoda was so livid, probably the most livid I've heard him in a while, against Lawson on the radio and even afterwards. And that is not a good look, because they're both fighting to stay when the Red Bull family, because there's no other family that's looking to get him. And The funniest thing I thought, like all of this kerfuffle with Tsunoda and Lawson at the time was for last place. We were fighting for last place.
Well,
do you want to talk about Williams?
Oh gosh. Well, my prediction of both Williams and the points did not come true. What is going on with Carlos Sainz and Williams? He was the star on Friday, managing to end up in P3 in the first two practice sessions. Albon impressed, so we could have expected great qualifying, but they ended up next to each other at P13 and 14. In the race, Sainz got into it with Bierman, which led to a collision and him sliding down the order. I thought for a brief moment, oh, thank goodness, we're going to get a safety car. Did not happen. To add insult to injury, Albon was quicker and Sainz had to follow team orders and let him through. He finished in P11, which is just the worst position on the grid. And his teammate went from P14 to P7.
I'm telling you, the honorary Ollie Bearman place is so poetic that Sainz, who collided with Bearman, ended up in that place.
Exactly.
Sauber had a weird weekend because Bartoletto, again, did great. He made it into Q3, started ahead of his manager, Alonso, who actually overtook him on the pit stop, which was very exciting to watch, of course, until Alonso had to DNF. And Bartoletto managed to hang on to P8 after Kimi Antonelli's penalty. So overall, I think that was the best the Sauber can do. Whilst Hülkenberg actually qualified better than his usual in Q2, but remember, he used to be a star of qualifying, getting that Sauber into Q3 regularly last year, and he fell off the cliff this year. But unfortunately, during the formation lap, he did suffer an issue. We believe it's hydraulic leak, and he had to abandon the car and not even start.
That was disappointing for him to not even compete in the race.
Now is our words of wisdom segment. Again, inspired by Charles Leclerc, but you'll be interested to know, Aaron, no Charles Leclerc quotes this time around. And we are highlighting anything we overheard on the radio, in the media, or during the broadcast that stood out and provided some inside depth or even controversy. So we're going to start very light and with Isaac Hadjar. So in Zandvoort last week, when he finally got his first podium, he broke the trophy. So the good news is he got a replacement trophy, but he also got something else. So this is the quote. I've been given glues by so many people. You can't imagine. I can glue the whole paddock.
That's cute.
It's very cute. Another cute moment was, it was not even a quote. It was something that he wrote. But George Russell was asked by a fan of Charles Leclerc to sign a picture at the Dutch Grand Prix. Now, remember, this is the one that George Russell was very upset about. It was investigated, but ultimately no penalty. So he did sign it, but he wrote off track, which is such a petty George thing to do, but also very funny. So the other funny quote was Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris after qualifying. So this is what Oscar Piastri says. One position for Lando, he'd be happy. Two positions for me, I'd be happy. And Lando went, so then I'd be unhappy. And I feel like that McLaren took it to heart.
They definitely did take that to heart.
So then we get into Max Verstappen, who had so, like, he was very talkative this weekend, which sometimes you never know who you're going to get. But this was the funny exchange with Oscar Piastri after qualifying. I'm not going to say what I did on the car. Then Oscar says $15 and Max says 15. Let me think about that. I just thought that was very cute. And less cute is what he said about Ferrari. If you want to drive for Ferrari, you want to win. And if you win with Ferrari, that's even better. Aaron, is he saying he wants to drive for Ferrari?
Who doesn't want to drive for Ferrari? Isn't that every driver's dream?
Well, that's what Vettel said, and Vettel very famously went from Red Bull to Ferrari. But I was just thinking, what does it mean for a driver as soon as he said that? Because chances are, if he wants to drive for Ferrari, he will drive for Ferrari.
I'd say what Max wants, Max will get.
So do you think it's more likely Mercedes or Ferrari for him?
I still think Mercedes.
Okay.
I think Mercedes just makes so much more sense for Max. He had lunch with Toto and Susie Wolf during summer break, and he was like, "Is it a crime to have lunch? I had lunch. It's not a big deal." But I just think it's hard for me to not think that there's a possibility of him going to Mercedes.
Fair enough. So finally, the last words of wisdom, and I hate to use this for the person who said it, is our least favorite father on the grid, Jos Verstappen, responding to Sergio Perez's father, claiming that Perez had a different car than Max when he was at Red Bull. What an idiot. He's always had the same material, but he just needs to push harder.
I don't really know what to say about Max's dad. I think he's always going to defend his son, but.
But I thought it was like, it's not helpful. It's not necessary. And if you really think that Sergio Perez's father doesn't know what he's talking about, you don't have to respond to that.
Yeah, it goes back to the old adage, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. But I will say it was nice to see Sergio Perez at the US Open final.
Yeah, so.
Let's spill the grid and talk about some of the off-track drama and get caught up on some of these things going on in the world of F1. The Monaco Grand Prix was extended till 2035. How do we feel about that?
I'm glad. As I mentioned, I think when we reviewed the Monaco Grand Prix, I want that Grand Prix to stay on the calendar. I think the history, the prestige, the glamour are worth it, even if the racing leaves a lot to be desired. I'm hoping this means that they will actually make changes to the track now that they know that they have a long-term relationship and they want to continue with showcasing the best racing possible. But I just think Monaco, first of all, has the best qualifying of most of the race. I think it is because Saturday is always so, the walls are so narrow, it's so exciting, and Leclerc always does well. So I am not against
It's
Monaco Grand Prix
just
staying.
such a boring race.
I don't
And
think
I
it.
know they tried with the two stop that did not work unless they put some parameters around it on when within so many laps it has to be. It's beautiful. The venue and the circuit looks amazing and the glitz and the glamour is incredible. I just wish they could find a way to add some drama and excitement to the race.
I agree, but to tell you the truth, like this year, Suzuka was a very boring race,
There's
and
a
it didn't
couple of
have.
them that are, I think it's like the size of the car and the tracks. Like, I know they've made some adjustments to some tracks on curbs to, there's so few of them where overtaking is actually possible.
Right, but my point is, Suzuka was just boring, and the qualifying wasn't that interesting. Whereas Monaco at least has exciting qualifying. So I still call it a good decision.
Well, between Monaco or Suzuka, definitely Monaco. Stefano Domenicali talked about changes that they're proposing or considering based on the survey to make F1 appeal to a younger audience, which would include no free practices, more sprints, and reversing the circuits and shorter races. They believe it's too long for young people. They need to educate these young fans because, personally, when I first started, I did not pay attention to practice. I never watched practice. I'd get caught up on social media on qualifying and then watch the race. That is not the case anymore. Now, do they need three practices? I don't know. I do get that that's how the drivers test and set up the cars, and I don't think the races need to be shorter, I think they're fine.
So I agree. So I think more sprints, as long as again the drivers are okay with it, I think that does create more buzz around the weekend. So I'm fine with that. I agree with you. I think practices are important. Now, do they have to be televised? Maybe not, but I think the drivers should still have them, and I think the people coming to the track should still have some action that they can watch. And let's be
Right,
honest,
because then
that's where
how?
revenue comes from.
Well,
So.
that's what I was about to say. If you're going to an F1 race, the whole experience would be at least getting the most out of it, which would include practices. And I agree. Maybe they don't all need to be televised, or they just do a highlight reel. I don't know. Some of the practices are actually really interesting, and I'll watch them in full. And sometimes I just watch the highlights. But I think back to when you go to live, when you go to ten, when I go to tennis tournaments, I purposefully look at the practice schedule to see which players I want to go watch practice. You get to see them. You have more chances to see your favorite drivers, your favorite teams throughout the weekend. If you take that away for a fan, how on earth are you going to justify the cost of getting someone for an entire weekend?
Exactly. So the reverse grids, I thought was not going to work. So I'm not even going to comment on that. But in terms of shorter races, again, I think that's not necessarily a short because the races are actually pretty finite, even if they are interrupted by red flags. And right, there's like a whole 3 hour rule that we learned about in Silverstone. So I think they are short enough. And you're right. It's more about education and probably making more opportunities to watch easier and cheaper. That would probably cause the young people to pay more attention to your races.
I agree. I mean, F1, if you want to talk, I'm sure we can brainstorm some ideas and help you out. Most of the races are what, an hour and a half? Very few are 2 hours. That's not that unrealistic. I mean, how long are football games or baseball games or golf matches or, I mean, tennis matches? Just depends on how many sets you have. And they don't even cap those on time. F1 races are capped on time. We say all the time, golf, tennis, F1, same stratosphere of fans. I would not change your entire model based on a few survey questions. If you really want to know how fans feel, I think they should target some of that towards existing fans, maybe in our age bracket.
I agree.
This one made me a little sad. Daniel Ricciardo is officially done with motor racing. He's retired and he is the Ford ambassador.
I kind of expected it, but you're
I
right. It
know,
just
but just
reminds
it's the
us.
finite, the finality of it is just a
Yeah.
little soul crushing. I'm not shocked.
Right.
I'm just sad.
I hear you.
But our favorite, Gunter Steiner is leading a consortium that will acquire full ownership of a Moto GP team, which is motorcycles, but still it's exciting to have him back in any sort of news.
I agree.
And Colton Herta, who we talked about last week, is named as a test driver for Cadillac after Mick Schumacher turned down the role of Cadillac's reserve driver. And we already mentioned it, but Checo Perez was spotted at the US Open during the Monza weekend when Cadillac ran a simulation of the race in real time, which I thought that was pretty cool that they did that and smart of them.
Right, and why is Checo Perez not involved in that?
That's a very good question. I don't know.
Because he needed to be at the US Open, obviously, but
I
I'm
mean,
just.
that was supposed to be, the expectation was that that was going to be a really great match. It did not hit the same stride as the French Open final. However, I think most fans probably had the expectation going in that the match would rival the clay courts instead of what they ended up with. But
Well, I mean, Sinner played poorly, but I just want to say there was an F1 race that he may have paid attention to. And so he probably was out of sorts, and because Ferrari didn't win. And that's what I claim is the reason for his loss at US Open.
well, could be. All right.
This race, for the most part, was a bit of a snooze. The first couple of laps were exciting with the position changes at the front, and then the action slowed down and became more of a game of chicken as teams were waiting for a safety car that never materialized to see who blinked first in terms of pitting for a mandatory tire change. McLaren added some unnecessary drama by shaking up the pitting order that ultimately resulted in having the drivers resolve the team's mistake, with the consequences that may be felt later in the year. We are now set for a little break before the next race in Baku, which hopefully will shake up the order and may even produce some Ferrari magic.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your least favorite team order. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.